So I want to end my remarks by reading a few lines from Chill, from Trilogy. I teach this poem now to undergraduates. The graduates of the same time, my undergraduates are here. Some graduate students are here who have read the poem with me. I'm still reading it. I'm still teaching it. I am convinced that 50 years from now, far more people will read Trilogy than read T.S. Eliot's The Wasteland. And again, I love The Wasteland. But way more people will read Trilogy than read The Wasteland or read Ezra Pound's Cantos, because there is knowledge in this poem which is extraordinarily precious for our future. I also hope there will be thousands and thousands of visitors a year, 50 years from now, coming to visit H.D.'s grave and coming also to look at the portrait that Josh and the crew here at the library are commissioning. The last thing I want to say about reading Trilogy today, and I don't want to be too politically tangential, but 18 years ago, a bunch of men, a small group of men, committed a criminal act. They hijacked a plane and flew it into buildings, and 3,000 innocent people died. It was a catastrophic and dramatic moment in our history. And what we did as a society, in our fear and our rage, was to launch two wars, which 18 years later we're still fighting. In those wars, almost 7,000 US soldiers have now died. 58,000 men and women have suffered severe life-changing injuries, both mental and physical. And a soldier, a veteran, kills himself or herself every 65 minutes in the United States. H.D. would not have been surprised by any of this. This was the story that she was trying to tell in Trilogy and that she's trying to tell in here, which is to say, why is it that in the face of violence, what we do is to perpetuate the cycle? And what would it involve for us to do something different? What would have to change in our hearts? Because she was convinced there was an emotional and psychological change that had to happen. What would have to change for us to stop that cycle? As many of you know, Trilogy is a long poem that H.D. wrote very quickly in three moment bursts of creative work in 1944 and 1945. She was living in London. The bombs were falling night after night after night. German bombers dropping bombs night after night. It was the first, Second World War was the first time we had absolutely systematic mass civilian bombing. H.D. lived in a state of more or less constant terror, and she wrote Trilogy as a response to this. And H.D. knew the munitions produced at the Bethlehem Steel Plant, which had been sold at the start of the war to the Germans as well as to the U.S. Army, were part of what threatened her life and were inflicting this terror. And she wrote Trilogy as an attempt to respond to this sense of a war that would not end. And she also, in Trilogy, was trying to talk about how that pattern of warfare was rooted in the persistent fantasy of male domination. So I want to read to you, and this is the last thing on your handout. So there's a page that has the firing of the rod here, and I want to read to you a half of poem one. So on the first page, you'll see poem one. I want to read half of poem one. I'm only going to read half of it because the first part of poem one is actually about the astoundingly ambitious revision of the Bible that H.D. conducts, and that's too much. I want to read the second half, which is about the problem of the and when H.D. says here, I want to start, this is about line 12 or 14, where she says, for even now the terrible banner. And when H.D. talks about the terrible banner, she's talking about all the paraphernalia of warfare. She's talking about the flags of war. And I want you to keep in mind, if you read this, that this is not abstract for HD. Every single night for 140 consecutive nights, German warplanes were dropping by randomly on civilians in London. And every night, HD was in fear for her life. And what HD is trying to ask here is, emotionally, how do we respond to this experience of terror, to this of this rage? And how do you respond? You leave your apartment, and you go out in the morning, and you see that many of your neighbors are dead. What do we do? What emotional resources do we have in the face of that? So she says this, for even now, the terrible ban darkens the blue chain. We have shown that we could stand. We have withstood the anger, frustration, bitter fire of destruction. And then she said, leave the smoldering cities below. We have done all we could. We have given until we have no more to give. Alas, it was pity rather than love we gave. Now, having given all, let us leave all. Above all, let us leave pity and mount higher to love. Resurrection. And now I want to read to you from the next poem. This is the last time I read to you. And then I promise you we'll shut up. This is poem 2. And here HD is tackling an enormously challenging problem that I think everyone in our society has to contend with one way or another. And that is when you live in a nation at war, when you live in a time of war, when you feel a sense of hopelessness about your own capacity to love. What difference does my love make? What do I do with my love, with my desire to live in peace with people, in a world in which the cycle of war just goes on and on? In poem 2, HD is struggling with this question. What do you do with your love? What do you do with that part of yourself which still believes in the possibility of humane connection to others? And I'll mention 2 things. HD has a reference. HD is always operating at this sort of symbolic and quasi-mystical level. And late in this short poem, she refers to the harvester sharpening his steel on stone. And for HD, and HD is thinking about the Bethlehem Steel Plant. She's thinking about the Bethlehem Steel Plant obsessively. What she's thinking about is the question of the preparation of war. What does it mean to live in a society where we are preparing all the time to kill? We are producing massive instruments of destruction. So there's this harvester sharpening his steel on stone. And at the end, some of you, who are more religious than I will immediately grasp this. HD refers at the end of the poem to the place of a skull. And HD is thinking both of 2 things. Again, I want you to think of the concreteness. Every single day, for months, she walks out the door of her building and is amazed that it's still standing, and she is seeing the destruction of London all around her. So when she talks about the place of the skull, she is talking about a city littered with dead people. But she is also referring to Golgotha. The Hebrew term means the place of the skull, the place of Jesus' crucifixion. So here HD is trying to say, in the face of all that violence, all that frustration, all that pessimism and despair, how do you nurture your capacity to love? So this is what she says. And remember I told you, the thing that's amazing about poetry is not just HD's diagnosis of the problem with it, but of her enactment of the thing that she thinks would lead us out of the problem. So she writes this. This is poem 2. I go where I love, where I am loved, into the snow. I go to the things I love with no thought of duty or pity. I go where I belong, inexorably, as the rain that has lain long in the furrow. I want you all to think about this metaphor that I read this, right? H.D. is saying that her capacity for love is like the rain. I go where I belong inexorably, as the rain that has lain long in the furrow. I have given or would have given life to the rain. But if it will not grow or ripen with the rain of beauty, the rain will return to the cloud. The harvester sharpens his steel on the stone, but this is not our field. We have not sown this. Pitiless, pitiless, let us leave the place of a skull to those who have fashioned it. I'll be happy to answer questions, you know, questions about anything that I said or touched on.